the new revolution in radio.
CyberStationUSA.com.
Americans are united in sending one message.
Good will to be with this man.
I will do my best to represent my nation.
We have an election now. Really looks good.
This is the evolution of radio.
We are more integrated now than at any other point in the history of the human race.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity segment on The Neil Haley Show. I'm excited to welcome to the program Jeremy Irvine of USA Network's Treadstone. Jeremy, thanks for calling.
And hey, thanks, Neil. Good to be with you.
I'm a huge fan of the Bourne franchise. It's something that I think we all wish we could wake up with, the ability to, in a way, use some of these skill sets that these Bourne killers have to represent and do certain things, but yet it's a horrible life for them. And so how excited were you, Jeremy, when you first were asked to be part of this project?
Well, I think you're right. I think probably, yeah, not so fun in reality, but a lot of fun as an actor to play. You know, it's kind of every boy's dream to sort of run around with a gun in an action movie kicking ass. So I loved it.
Exactly. And so is it the same thought process as in the Bourne thing, that basically they at one point were programmed and they didn't know and they completely forgot everything and then were set to do certain tasks so that their mind would not, the human element of their life would not get involved in the process?
Sort of. I mean, with my character, I was working for the CIA. And I was sent across, this is during the Cold War, my storyline. So I'm sent across into East Berlin to to go and infiltrate a Russian facility where we think they're doing mind control. And as I'm doing that, I get captured and sort of put into the under the program itself by the Russians. My character's sort of able to sort of hold on to enough of himself that he manages to escape, but then sort of finds out that maybe he's been programmed more than he thought, and it's kind of this, you know, sort of in a battle of him questioning whether he's a good guy or a bad guy. You know, has he been deliberately sent back by the Russians to sort of fight against his own country?
So it points to you forget things as your character without giving anything away that happened before,
Yeah. So there's, you know, so he's sort of about discovering what the last 6 months have been for his character. Just when he thinks he's sort of figured it out, it all gets sort of turned on its head.
We're going to learn from this process that there were a bunch of people like yourself being programmed and developed at this time, right? We're kind of going back in history
Yeah, mine's sort of the origin story, and then the other main storylines are all set in the present day, so sort of after the last sort of Bourne film that we've seen. So they sort of pick up where that left off, and there's a few references for the hardcore fans, and you'll be able to sort of figure out where these guys have been while all the films have been going on. So it's kind of, it's got a good mix, I think.
So tell me about the training to get ready for this, because there's a lot of action involved in this.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the physical stuff. I mean, it was about 2 months of training with the stunt teams to learn all the fight techniques. And they're very, you know, the thing that I loved about the Bourne films was how sort of real and visceral the action scenes were and the fight sequences were. So the stunt team are, you know, really insistent on everything that went into these fight sequences that you'll see in the series. They're all shot live in front of camera. You know, it's not a load of CGI in front of a green screen. It's all done for real, which meant that we had to sort of learn the techniques for real. And everything that you see are techniques actually taught in martial arts and actually taught to special forces. So yeah, it's sort of got that sort of hyper realism to it. A lot of the stunt directors and military background and stuff like that. So yeah, trying to keep it hyper real as well as entertaining as well.
Does this make you enthused with the learning this certain self-defense and stuff to want to learn more after going through this process for 2 months to prepare yourself?
Yeah, it's great fun. I mean, I loved it. I mean, it's great fun when you're doing it and you're hitting someone who's wearing pads. I mean, I don't think I want to fight any of my stunt doubles without that. But it's just such a laugh, you know, as an actor getting to do all that stuff. And I loved every minute.
You know, what's also cool is the fans, right? You have a built-in audience already of fans of the Bourne series that are all going to be coming, reaching out via social media and asking questions. And that's a great start point to a show that just starts out, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's great to hopefully have that audience already. It's also a lot to live up to. I mean, I hope we do it justice. I feel like we have. I definitely think, you know, it's an action on a level that we haven't seen on TV before. So I really hope that people who enjoyed the movies enjoy it as much as that. I mean, I'm certainly class myself as a Bourne fan. I'll be my own worst critic, no doubt.
So are you big on social media, Jeremy? Some people aren't. So are you a social guy?
I have an Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah, I have an Instagram, which I do my best on. I don't know. I do my best. I sort of rebelled against it for a long time, and I only really got it about 3 or 4 years ago. And it's kind of a necessity now. In this business,
it is. You know, it is.
I tried not to, and then, there were jobs where they're like, it's a new contract. Your social media obligations. So, yeah, but you know, I do it for fun now. You know, try and keep it fun.
Isn't it funny the people that completely lock themselves out now? The everyone's like, you have to be, especially with all the streaming, right? Because again, you can kind of bring people back that couldn't tune in tomorrow night at 10 p.m. and on USA Network and say, hey, you can catch up. So that's a great way for you to do that. Yeah.
I mean, no doubt there's a lot of downsides to it, but I mean, there's also a lot of upsides. I mean, especially, you know, as an actor, being able to sort of reach the people who probably, you know, if they're following you, then they probably do want to see your movies. So, you know, it's great for that, and it's great for being able to sort of, yeah, you know, if you do like a project, you'll notice I talk about it a lot. There's probably quite a few projects I've done where I never mention it on social media, and that's probably a good sign as to how I personally feel about it.
Now, anything else, any other projects going on? People can go check you out on Instagram to find out what else is going on with you, right, Jeremy? Anything else going on right now?
A couple of things.
Yeah.
There's a movie, which I've got a little part in, with Emma Roberts and some other great actresses called Paradise Hills. There's a movie out early next year called The Last Full Measure, which is sort of a Vietnam War thing with Sebastian Stan and Ed Harris and some great people like that. So, a few bits and bobs to still come out this year. I'm sure this won't be my last bit of press for the year. But we'll see.
Well, I'm going to give you a prediction. This show's going to go great. This is going to be awesome. The built-in audience, everyone loves this action. And USA Network, perfect place for sure. Think about it with all the different types of great programming out there. You have a great platform and you're going to have great success. So I appreciate you calling, Jeremy. Everyone needs to tune in again.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank
you
very much.
You're welcome. 10 p.m. Eastern tomorrow night. Take care, man. See you. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Bye.
You'll listen to Neil Haley's show. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show's Author's Corner segment, Miami Book Fair. I mean, finally, it's getting cold in Pittsburgh. Why am I happy about that? Because, again, I kind of like fall, but once it gets to winter, look out. The only place to be is the Miami Book Fair, November 17th to 24th, and the Street Festival's 22nd to 24th. Go to MiamiBookFair.com for more information. I remember it's been 10 years I've covered it. 1 year I was in Miami. I I guarantee I'll be doing this event for years to come. And at one point in time, I'll have to make it back to Miami. But I talked to an amazing author, so I'm excited to welcome to the program author Nicole Chung, author of All You Can Ever Know. Nicole, how are you? And thanks for stopping by today.
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for inviting me, Neil.
Absolutely. Let's kind of go into specifically how you became a writer. I always love these stories because everyone has their own story. Do you go and ask other authors how they became a writer? Is that a story that every author? Yeah, I think everyone does. Yeah,
I do. Yeah. Everyone has an origin story. I think for a lot of us, we grew up sort of as natural storytellers, right? Right. Sometimes as a way of making sense of the world. Like a lot of people, my first like quote unquote book was like made out of construction paper and stapled together. I was probably making it when I should have been paying attention to school or something. but yeah, so I've always loved telling stories. I actually grew up writing mostly fiction and poetry, bad poetry. This book is a memoir, of course, so it's nonfiction and it's about part of my life. And I didn't actually start writing nonfiction till like my late 20s, which was kind of a surprise to me at the time. I never really thought I would. But my path to nonfiction and memoir specifically was I was living in North Carolina. I had like a new baby. I was looking for something to do and I joined a local writing group. And oh, like wow. To my surprise, yeah, everybody was actually writing nonfiction as opposed to fiction. And I had never really tried memoir. So I wrote an essay or two and I found I really loved it. So I've been doing that ever since. But yeah, I think like a lot of writers, I grew up really thinking of this as the dream and didn't necessarily ever think it would really happen.
Okay, so tell me your publishing story.
My publishing story, how I found a publisher, literally.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's always a little bit shocking. And this is my first book, so it was my first like rodeo. Yeah, let me see. So, I mean, I had the idea to write this book, which is about, it's about growing up adopted, transracially adopted. I grew up in a white family. I'm Korean American. Grew up in a small town in Southern Oregon. Okay. And then it's about searching for my birth family when I became an adult. And actually, it was at the same time that I was pregnant with my first child. So these two things like are happening at the exact same time, my pregnancy and this search for my birth family. So my family was really sort of expanding in these two very different but like, you know, related ways at the same time. So I wanted to write about that. I had been writing an essay here or there about the experience, and I noticed I would get a lot of interesting like feedback, like follow-up questions, and people seemed to be really curious. Yeah. Like, what happens when an adoptee grows up? What happens when you find your birth family? If you do, can you really belong to both your birth and adoptive families at the same time? And like, what is that like? And I realized it was because a lot of people had not really read much about adoption, like from the adopted person's perspective. We don't have a ton of narratives in the mainstream, I guess, about adoption from the adoptee perspective, especially like transracial adoptees. So there's a lot of curiosity, and I would write another piece or two and try to sort of address those questions. And eventually it just seemed like I wouldn't be able to do the whole story justice unless I wrote a full book. Because, you know, just telling the story piecemeal, essay by essay, it was difficult. And so that's really when I began to think, well, maybe this is a book.
I think that it's so great that you're willing to open up your feelings in this journey, because when you get an adopted family and you really love them and you really have had a great experience, but yet you still want to know your origin, you still want to know who your birth parents are, why this happened and everything. And mm-hmm. then you finally might get this, because we don't want to give this away, get to meet them, develop a relationship and all these things. And then you're going to open it up to the public, the story. That really means getting out of your comfort zone.
It does. And I think, you know, like I said, I'd had years of practice from the very beginning, just starting to write essays and share them with like a few people. I remember when that was really terrifying for me.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus Mission USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
About this, I was shaking. I was so nervous. And it would be like another 5-6 years before I published anything publicly. It really kind of took me a while to work up to opening this part of my life up. I am really glad I did. I've heard like just the most amazing feedback and like stories, similar stories from readers. I'm really glad I did. But yeah, it definitely took time. I think I needed some years after the search to kind of process and get to a point where A, I could write about it, and B, I could actually put that out there, like, for consumption.
Right.
But yeah, very happy that I did and very grateful for the response.
So what did the publisher say the reason they published you? What made it special? Because that's always interesting before you take it out and put it out to the public. You get
question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've never gotten that question before. Let me see if I can remember exactly what they said. I think, it's interesting. I think because there aren't a lot of memoirs from the adoptee perspective, it might have been viewed as like a risk by some publishers, but my publisher, Catapult, they never saw it that way as a risk. They were really excited from the beginning. I remember they immediately latched on to the fact that it was a unique and important perspective. Just the fact that, again, like what we think we understand about adoption is largely not told from the adopted person's point of view, and how adoptees are so often sort of relegated to the sideline and not really centered in these stories that are fundamentally about us. I think the chance to sort of tell an adoption story that may hit certain familiar notes for some people who know about adoption, but from a completely different viewpoint, was really exciting to them. And they never looked back. I mean, they were fully on board from the beginning and have been real champions of the book. It's been like a great experience working with them.
So I always think of this in a marketing sense. I have a digital marketing tech company.
Sure.
And I work with a lot of self-published authors, running mm-hmm. their social media marketing, creating websites,
yes.
looking at marketing campaigns. And I try to give them advice, especially some of them want to get published. If they do, mm-hmm. or even if they're not, if you don't have a book that you can market, and you're not going to sell books, bottom line, because you have to have an audience that wants to read the book. And I wanted to hear that answer. Well, the adoption marketplace is gigantic of people who have been adoptees or have been involved in some sort of adoption. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is what your publisher saw as, wow, this is a great story. And there are a lot of people who are going to want to buy the book because of their relationship towards adoption.
And it's true.
I think so. And it's becoming a bigger marketplace when you look at how many overseas adoptions are happening mm-hmm. in the last 20 years and how these conversations have to come up at one point in time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do remember, like, early on in the discussion, and I can't remember the host or the editor's name, but I was talking with someone who didn't offer for the book, and they said something along the lines of, like, do you think anybody will read it if they're not adopted? And I remember thinking, well, like, yes, I do. I hope so. But even if it were just adoptees reading, and it's not, but even if it were, that's a huge number of people. Oh, if yes, you look yes, at the people who are adopted and their families and the people who are kind of just like impacted by adoption in some way, like siblings and birth parents and, you know, grandparents, there's just so many people. Adoption's always a multi-generational story. You know, it always has these impacts like beyond the adopted person, right? And their parents even. So yeah, it's true. I mean, that said, like, I think the vast majority of people I hear from aren't adopted, but it's been really special to hear from,
yes,
like from fellow adoptees reading the book. That's meant a lot to me in the last year.
And so that's the way that you take your book in the next couple of years, to keep it living and keep it on the shelves, to keep being bought off the shelves in a literal sense, in the fact that you have such a marketplace for your fan base that are people have been adopted or been part of an adoption process. So that's something for you to say, I can have this book live on past its shelf life because of that built-in audience. So that's something you'd think about down the line, mm-hmm, how you keep this going. Because, I mean, that's the other thing, is how long does a book last till you write your next book? But you could still be selling this book while you're doing that. So that's the nice thing. Niche is the new thing, is being niche. If you're not niche, the differences in our society, we can market to one specific category of people. Before, we couldn't. We had to go to the mass. Now, because of social media, marketing, blogs, different podcasts, different radio shows, different just genre opportunities, groups of people, meetups, member groups, you really could, this could live on forever. And that's, I think that's a great thing for you to look at your first novel.
Yeah, well, you always hope with a book that it'll live on. I do think that it's the job of a memoirist to try to make a story relatable and sort of universal. So there is that niche interest, but I also think there's a lot in the book, like there's a lot about family, like and chosen family and family secrets and, you know, what happens, you know, how every family, whether they're biological or adoptive,
yes, they all
there's
think
like
that,
family yeah. lore that mm-hmm. people kind of buy into. And it takes a lot sometimes to start to question like those stories that you've always heard, or ask about the people in your right. family no one talks about. And I think that's like a real aspect of the book that other people have latched onto. It's just like what it's like to be curious about those stories that you don't hear or that have been like actively hidden from you. But yeah, I definitely hear what you're saying.
Last thing to think about is all these television shows that are showing not the sure. average family now, not the mm-hmm. not the family that I grew up. I'm 46 that watched on television. That was the everyday average family, that everything is perfect in life, or just we're never really going to look at this, to now where there's these family dichotomies out there. So it's perfect. It's a perfect sense. And I see why your publisher saw that. So Nicole, and it's great
Thanks.
To hear that the feedback of all the people that have been reading your book and cannot wait to meet you in Miami. So best
Thank
place they
so
can
much.
To connect with you right now and say one, and hopefully purchase the book and then go ahead and get it autographed when they're in Miami. Nicole, where's the best place we can go?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
Yeah.
Question?
Where can we connect with you?
Website, oh, that's a great question. Yeah, yeah. I just heard back that my panel will be on Sunday, the 24th. So of course it's at Miami-Dade College, like all of the other events, and it's at 2:30 in the afternoon on Sunday. And then there will be a signing to follow. So I'm really excited. I've actually never been to Miami before, so I'm thrilled to get to visit.
Your website too, Nicole, do you have a website? Or,
sure. Yeah, yes. Yeah. NicoleChung.net. And I'm also on Twitter at Nicole_Sujung. So you can definitely find me there. I'm on Twitter way too much, like most people who are on Twitter.
Oh, I know that. I live on Twitter a lot, but a lot of my clients, not enough for me. I get out there, but you can stay on there forever. But I appreciate you calling, and thanks and best of luck.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Neil Haley's show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show's Author's Corner segment, again, promoting the Miami Book Fair. I cannot believe it'll be 10 years I've covered it, coming into the summer. I mean, coming into November. It's just unbelievable. I'm thinking I want summer weather when I remember the first time I visited Miami. I recommend anyone who is a fan of books to go check out one of the best book fairs in the world. I think the best because I am biased about it. But again, Miami Book Fair is November 17th to 24th. The street fair is 22nd to 24th. Visit MiamiBookFair.com when you get a chance. And we continue to interview amazing authors. Last week, really got some great feedback from our authors' guests, and people keep saying, Neil, you got to keep interviewing authors year-round, especially to the quality and level of these authors. So I'm excited to welcome the program author David Heatley of Qualification. David, how are you, and thanks for calling.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, David. Let's kind of, you know, just jump right into specific things. Wow. Yeah. So the first time back since then, it's a crazy, crazy time when you think about it, you know, specifically enough how long the process. What do you love most about when you go to Miami for the book festival? Is it hanging out with the authors? What do you like the best?
Yeah, I think it was being with, you know, my fellow authors. I actually had an amazing experience last time of meeting Matt Groening, and he was in a hotel restaurant that I happened to be at eating alone, and I saw him over there, and I said, I got to go introduce myself, and I said who I was, and he had just happened to have gotten my book the week before, so he was excited to meet me, and he said, you know, let's hang out at this author part later with another cartoonist, and it was just a mind-blowing, like, you know, super exciting kind of fan experience just being with him.
And that's as amazing as there are authors of all different genres, and you're as a writer, you're a fan of other authors as well, and you can't wait to go meet them. And that's a great story that you were able to bring up for sure.
Yeah, that was really fun. It was also bizarre because he was in some kind of like rock and roll oldies cover band, like playing or singing backup, I think. So he was like chatting with me and this cartoonist Ariel Schrag on the side, and then he would go on stage and sing a little bit and come back and talk to us. It was really kind of surreal.
All right, let's talk about how you became an author. Tell us the story.
Well, really, it goes back to being a little kid, you know, just drawing my own versions of kind of the children's books I was reading. And it was always words and pictures for me. I never really thought I would be just a straight up writer. So, you know, and then I was drawing my own cartoons in middle school, sort of making fun of the popular kids or the kids that would annoy me. And then in high school, I got like a little bit more serious. I got exposed to some, you know, slightly more artistic literary works of comics. And I just kind of started copying people like Chris Ware or Dan Clowes or Julie Doucet. You know, the 90s was really an explosion of this sort of alternative comic book world. And then, you know, it's just grown into book length works in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years or so. That's really been my focus.
Interesting always where you see how you start and where you're going now, right, David?
And oh, yeah.
For sure.
It's always a winding path, you know, and then you look back and say, oh, well, it got me here.
What's next? So tell us about your book Qualification.
Yeah, this is another graphic memoir. It's the story of growing up in a 12-step household and kind of having that culture and that ideology really forced on me for about 20 years. And then I sort of gave in and tried it myself when I turned 30, my daughter was born, and really I got lost in it. So this is a story about kind of almost getting addicted to the recovery process and 12-step meetings. And I'm really just trying to peel back the layer of secrecy surrounding these groups and just talk about what I found there, what worked for me and what really didn't.
When you think about 12 steps and trying to recover from something, it's such a challenge, right? Because you think you're on the right track and then something happens.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things people would say in the room was that you know, their demons or their vices was like, you know, the phrase was, it's like trying to put an octopus to bed. You know, you put one tentacle down and another one springs up. So that was definitely my experience too.
And sometimes you think you're on the right track, right? Everything is going well and circumstance gets in the way and you fall right back down.
Yeah. I mean, life is hard for everyone. It's doubly hard if you have a lot of demons and a troubled childhood and compulsive behavior to contend with.
And what would you say in the 12 steps, what causes people to hit rock bottom, and when they have to meet, what step is the one that's the most challenging for people that they kind of go back to what their old ways if they can't pass the step?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think everyone kind of tells the same story of hitting some sort of like personal bottom where they just couldn't continue anymore or whatever. You know, people say their drug or their compulsive behavior was a solution for a while and it worked, and then it stopped working, which is why they then found the program. But I would say, you know, the fourth
we have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. We shake up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyberstation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio. The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Step is where you take what's called a searching and fearless moral inventory, and that's where you're really supposed to look at yourself. And as you know, as someone who's kind of has narcissistic tendencies like I do, that's really hard. It's really hard to just fully own up to your own behavior and the way you've kind of messed up your life and the lives of the people around you. So I do think a lot of people have trouble kind of getting all the way through that step and finishing that inventory.
It's so true. Yeah, when you finish that inventory and you tell yourself, okay, I really got to become different. I have to make that change. And there's crossroads in your life every time. And the demons in your head that mess with your head and your mind, you never know what direction you're going to go. You think you're on the right path, and then bam, something hits you. A tragedy, a certain change in your life, and you try to, your health issue, and you try to recover from that. And you try to cope, and some people cope in the wrong ways. Some people just give up and think that adversity leads to just collapsing. What do you think what do you think, David, from, you know, this research and looking at this more and more causes that? This, like, just think about it. Like, some people just are the most successful people in the world have handled adversity to the greatest extent. The ones that don't, they're the ones that forget about it. They just, you know, crawl up in a ball and say, woe is me, I can't recover.
Yeah. I mean, so I do believe that the world is stacked against certain people. Institutionalized discrimination against people who are born poor or born people of color. Like, that's real. And that makes things twice as hard as anyone else. But I would say also a lot of it is kind of an attitude shift if you're able to make it, which is that, you know, life does kind of pull you along like a current in a stream, and you're better off not trying to swim the opposite direction. It's good to try and look around and say, okay, which way is this pulling me? And let me make the best of this direction. Otherwise, you do wind up, you know, you crash onto a rock or you wind up drowning trying to, you know, flail and swim in the wrong direction. I certainly had many experiences like that. And I've tried to, in my, I guess, middle age now, 45, just, you know, go with the flow a bit more.
I agree. But then I'll give you that point, David. You never know when that crossroads is going to happen again, and you have to make that decision. You think your life is a certain way and you're getting into use of these circumstances, then something happens, either good or bad, that just changes your whole persona in life. And it happens. It happens from a job. It happens from a career opportunity. It happens from meeting a specific person that you never thought you crossed paths with. And then bam. But you're right about the institutionalized thing, poverty. It's going to take a lot harder for someone with has poverty to get to a level of success. It's a lot harder for somebody who has a disability to get to a certain level. And I think that's why the motivational world, David, is one of the billion-dollar businesses, self-help programs that are out there. How much money is poured into that industry every year for people to try to become happy?
Oh yeah, it's pretty disgusting, to be honest, because it does prey on people who think, you know, that they can just overcome things just with a switch in their mindset, when really it's, like I said, it's kind of stacked against them. I'm not sure. It's almost a miracle when someone makes it out of that circumstance, and it leads people to believe that anyone can do it, but I don't think anyone can do it. I think it's a pretty special, unique person that's able to pull that off.
To pull off such adversity, such pain, and still have a positive outlook on life. That's something, again, that we haven't studied. So when we talk about the 12 steps, the 12 steps are not meant for everyone in their brain, how their brain chemistry works. We've not scientifically been able to really examine a brain to the level we'll do in 20 to 30 years, where we'll understand why people think the way they think. We have not gotten to that point yet. So as you think, David, 12 steps really doesn't mean 12 steps doesn't work for everybody based on their brain, based how their brain reacts. Yeah,
some of this is purely chemical too. Some people need medication to function. You know, it's not all just going to be a leap of faith and a, you know, magical belief system that you'll be fixed if you do these, you know, these few steps. I mean, you're right. That won't cut it for a lot of people.
See, that's a great point. You brought up medication. We got to come up with a way to work with pharmaceutical companies to find healthier drugs that are safer and test and really spend our money for mental health. And how much from your research, if you looked at 12 steps in addiction involving drug addiction or alcoholic addiction, have you seen that the reason a lot of these people are suffering is because of mental illness?
Well, I can just really speak anecdotally about that. I mean, as someone who spent 6 years going to as many different programs, six different programs, I did see a lot of mental illness in the rooms. I really did. I saw kind of clinically bipolar people, you know, just saying the most outrageous stuff, and you have to sit there and listen to it. But then I also heard people kind of triumphantly sharing, you know, I just dumped all my medication and all I need is the 12 steps now. I wouldn't say everyone is like that, of course, but there's a lot of it there. And then there's also, I do see kind of a thread of almost like clinical narcissism that plagues a lot of people too, which is, you know, they've found a program where they can still feel special because I'm in this special category called addict, and I have a unique relationship to God because of that. There's a bit of that attitude too, which is kind of funny. So I do think, you know, a good chunk of people could probably recover and have happier lives if they did have the right medication.
No, I think, and that's where it has to be the right medication that works for everybody, because again, our brains, but hopefully in the next 30 years, science will be able to really discover how really our brains work and why we react the way, because we can go down that track. And then at 55, something happens to our brain, CTE, certain things, if you're an athlete, things like that.
Yeah.
And then that brain is thinks completely differently, and why is it certain people can deal with so a lot of different things. I think, David, we're going pretty deep in this conversation, but that's good. Instead of giving away the book. But I think, did you ever think you'd write something like this? I mean, I don't know in your background, did you ever think you put something out here like this? That's, you know, when you talk about your expertise to write about something like this.
Yeah. So my first book was also a memoir, and it was incredibly candid. It was really like an examination of kind of my sexual history and my hangups. And then also, it's a long section about race and kind of studying my own racism and trying to expose it. But while I was working on that book and finishing that book, I was deep into the program. So I didn't even see that as sort of like a subject matter. In fact, it was just the way I lived my life. It really wasn't until I left the program that it dawned on me that, wait, this is its own book. This is its own story. So I would say almost immediately after leaving, I did think I want to write about this, but it really took me, it took probably 4 years of just writing to figure out what I was trying to say. And then another two to actually draw the thing. So it was a long process.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I'm impressed by you for sure, David. Do you think you're ever going to get away from the memoir and write about other things with your creativity and what you've learned in this process of these two books?
Yes, for sure. I have actually have a book proposal I'm finishing right now for a fictionalized. It's a fictionalized version of a story from my teenhood, but it is definitely, there's a lot of creative fictional license in there, and I'm excited to kind of move into fiction now.
Hey, you got a lot of years to write to go, David. Stay healthy, stay on the track. But you, as you know, and I know, we think we're on the right track, and then something takes us off that track. And that's where I think we need to really talk more and more to people about, it's okay to deal with these things. It's okay to be struggling like this, because everyone, if you really got to know them and didn't look at their Facebook posts or their, or what they said, that's truly not their lives at all. And we have to do that. So Dave, best place we can find info on you, where we can go, where's the best place?
Honestly, if you go to the publisher's website, Penguin Random House, and just look up David Heatley qualification, they have a link on there that'll link out to many different stores. So, I mean, I personally like to buy local indie bookstores. It'll push you to IndieBound. It'll push you to Amazon, Barnes & Noble. So however you get your books, you should be able to find it.
David, I appreciate you coming on, and a great story for sure. And best of luck.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Neil Haley's show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Neil Haley show on the Total Celebrity segment. And, you know, it's very interesting when you talk to athletes. And I got to be honest, I've probably only interviewed a few that, you know, Canadian Football League is their home. They talked about stories where they started in the NFL and had to go to the Canadian Football League. So I'm excited to welcome to the program Lyle Green. Lyle, how are you? Former Canadian football star, podcaster now. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you very much. I'm doing great. And I'm looking forward to our talk.
And it's very interesting. I saw that you grew up in Kitchener and I wrestled as a professional wrestler there years ago for a promotion.
No way.
Back in the day, Joey Legend wrestled there and Rhino Richards. Rhino was a big WWE star. I was a minor league for X amount of years and I was on that tour in Kitchener. So I remember it completely. So,
at the old auditorium.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. And it was a great experience. I forgot other different people there. I was on tour with the Bushwhackers and stuff like that. So if we're looking, I'm 46.
Oh, nice.
I see you're 45. So you're probably at that time. It was 20 years ago. You're probably playing football in the Canadian Football League at that point, right? If we're looking at time stamping this 23 years ago, right? I'm looking at.
Yeah. I've been 20 years ago. I've been playing. Maybe what year is that? Yeah, maybe my first few years, or maybe just finishing up college.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about real quick, Lyle. The whole thing is, so you grew up in Canada. Is that a challenge to, you know, push you look at Canadian to have that goal of playing professionally when you grew up in Canada, and when so many people's dreams are hockey?
Yeah, definitely. Hockey is the main sport here in Canada, and it's maybe a much easier, much more smoother path, I guess, to make it in hockey than is football. Football doesn't really thought of as much up here as it's as hockey is, but it's getting more popular and it's getting getting better, and the schooling up here, like the universities and the players, are getting better, so it's getting easier to do that. But yeah, definitely it's a tough road to get to the pro level as a football player.
And I remember I interviewed an NFL player, and it'll come to me in a second, that played for the Eagles, that was from Canada, that I think ultimately did not go play play Canadian college football. So there are opportunities to play college football in Canada, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are Canadian universities, and they do offer football. Back when I started out, it wasn't the quality obviously wasn't as good. Most of the better players end up getting scholarships and going down to the States. But now the caliber of players and the coaching is, that's the big thing. That coaching is getting better because a lot of ex-players are becoming coaches up here in Canada, which helps keep some of the talent up here as well. So the caliber of players are getting better up here in the Canadian university. So more and more players are becoming pro athletes from the Canadian schools.
So you went on to play at Akron. So I was looking at that, different things, and at that time period.
Actually, it's Toledo.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Toledo. And you get those mixed up in the MAC sometimes. You played at Toledo.
The MAC schools. Yeah.
Did you ever play Pitt back then when you were at Toledo?
We never played Pitt, no. We played Ohio State. Played them at the big house, and didn't turn out too well that day. But we did play at Penn State at
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach. A fully integrated, one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. Stitcher.
Stitcher.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archived CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
Stitcher.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Penn State, and we actually won that game. My senior year, we played at Penn State, and we actually beat them that year. So we played some big schools and some pretty big games. We played Purdue one year when Drew Brees, his freshman year, was playing. Yeah, so we played some good caliber players. Played Randy Moss against Randy Moss when he was at Marshall. He hurt us pretty badly a couple of times in the MAC championships, but. That's Randy Moss, so you expect that kind of thing. But we play against some pretty good players over the years.
What other schools recruited you in the United States to play?
Syracuse recruited me a little bit, and then MAC schools like Kent State and Western Michigan. Those were the schools that were most interested. But Toledo came after the hardest, and There's a lot of, we recruit Canada quite a bit, and there's a kind of a group of Canadian guys that, that were there already. So that's is a kind of a good fit for me and a good, yeah, good spot for me. So I not too far from home as well. So that was nice as well. So Toledo was definitely the best place for me to go.
Now you brought up Toledo. You saw a player that ended up playing in the NFL, and I forget where he's at. I tutored him back in Pittsburgh, back when he played at Penn Hills, Trayvon Hester. I don't know if you continue to focus on Toledo and certain players that played in the NFL. So that's kind of an interesting conversation. He blocked the kick that they did not give him credit for last year against the Bears. So I felt pretty proud. I tutored him in the SAT, and yeah, I remember the kicker for the Bears blew that kick. So there goes the Toledo connection. The always interesting connections. Kitchener, Toledo, we'll go from there. Yeah. So did you ever, and did you have aspirations to play in the NFL at that point in time when you were playing at Toledo? Did you think you had a shot?
Yeah.
Did you try out?
Yeah, obviously that's the goal, to play at the highest level. So, yeah, I definitely want to play in the NFL. But, yeah, this wasn't didn't quite have all the numbers or the speed or the size, because I was kind of a tweener for my position. I was a running back, but I was not really fast enough to be a tailback. I didn't have the 40 and the 4.4s or 4.3 40, so it was tough to make it. But yeah, we had pro days at the school, and some of the NFL teams would come by, and I did my training in my 40s and all the drills and stuff like that, but nothing came about for me to make it to NFL, which would have been nice. But yeah, definitely can't complain. I had a nice long career in the CFL. I got to play pro football for 10 years.
That's fantastic. Yeah,
I definitely can't complain. Yeah,
and looking at that time period, if we go back historically, the Arena Football League was pretty big at that time, and also I think NFL Europe as well at that time. So the decision for they were really big at that point. What made you decide in the CFL versus those two other options? Because you could have played Arena League. There's no doubt. I'm sure you could have. And then looking at specifically enough NFL Europe at that time.
Yeah, CFL is probably the best fit for one. I was drafted by them, so they – I was picked up by BC, so as a first round pick, as a third pick in the draft, in the CFL draft, and so that was a big draw. So the financially, I guess that would be the best option for me, for one, and obviously being in Canada, back home in my native country, is another draw as well. So those two factors were what I guess led me to go to the CFL.
Interesting. And I guess that probably at that time in that option, which one was considered the higher level? You probably had lots of NFL players that got cut that headed on to any of those leagues we talked about, Arena, the other. How about the ones that came that had their cup of coffee in the NFL then came to the CFL? What kind of experiences did you have with some of those players that came through, and how did they think a little differently than the ones that just stayed with CFL?
Guys that come to the NFL
from the NFL.
I guess a lot of them are, I guess you could say, surprised at the level of play, because it's really, really good football, real high quality football. So a lot of guys from the NFL might come up and kind of think that they can just show up and dominate in the CFL, which isn't the case. It's a little bit of a learning curve for one. It's a little bit of a different game. And again, once they get here, they're surprised at the level of the quality of play that the CFL players have, because we're pretty much, just as fast, just as quick, just as strong. The only difference is between a NFL guy and a CFL guy may be size-wise. NFL guys might be a bit bigger and maybe a tad faster, but for the most part, it's a pretty equal level of play. So. Once they get here, they realize it's high quality football, and a lot of guys that come from the NFL end up don't making it up here in the CFL, because they maybe have the wrong attitude towards the game and don't put in the work that they need to stay here and to sustain a career up here. But it's a high quality league, and lots of great players that are playing up here that could play in the NFL, but decide not to go back down because of all the politics or the uncertainty of having to make other teams there. So, but yeah, it's a great league and great quality football for sure.
Well, the biggest stars, I'd say, in the CFL that I remember, if I talk about before your time, and then I want to ask which ones did you have that came through that were high play, high level, known American players that came to the CFL. Let's think about Doug Flutie. Let's talk about Warren Moon, who's probably the greatest player that ever played from in the NFL that went on to the NFL. Would you say Warren Moon? And I'm trying to think of Billy White Shoes Johnson as well. I think he came from.
He played up here, yeah.
Yeah, I interviewed Billy White Shoes.
Joe Theismann. Joe Theismann actually played up here, yeah.
Yeah. So who would you say?
Jeff Garcia.
Yeah. What about when your time? Who were the biggest players that came to the CFL at your time from the NFL?
Cam Wake, who's a player I played with. He played with me in BC. He was with us for a couple of years, his first 2 years, and just dominated and was defensive player of the year this 2 years up here, and just wreaked havoc across the league and went down to the NFL in Miami and did the same thing down there. So I guess Cam would probably be the top player for me that I played with.
Are you still involved in the CFL in any way, Lyle, promoting it or doing anything to kind of carry the flag from playing 10 years there?
No, nothing official, no official posts or anything like that. I still go to some Lions games and BC Lions games up here and still support and follow the team, follow the league when I can. But nothing official, but I still love the game and still love watching and supporting the guys and know some of the guys and actually probably know more of the coaches now than the players that are out there, but still love the game and still support them.
Are you ever thinking of being like a commentator, being a part of the CFL in a way of like a journalist type thing where you kind of cover some of the games and stuff like that and be given the kind of color commentating? Have you ever thought of doing that for the CFL?
I thought about it a little bit. When I first left the game, I kind of inquired a little bit about getting into that, but up here there's only the one station, the only TSN that covers football. So not like in the States where there's so many teams for one and so many opportunities to get into broadcasting. Up here it's just the one. So nothing I'm pursuing, but if something comes up, I'd definitely listen and be interested in seeing what they'd offer. But nothing that I'm pursuing right now.
All right, life after football. How did you make once you're retired from the CFL? What was your plan? Did you have a plan in action to what you wanted to do?
Nothing official. I mean, I did have my education. I have my undergrad and my master's degree. So I kind of figured I could do something with that. But I just tried to find something that that I liked and something that I would fit our family situation. And I got into the mortgage business, and I started out in that, and now I've kind of transitioned into teaching. I'm an instructor at a college up here. So just try and find something that you like. Obviously, you're not going to find something that fulfills you the same way that football does. It's nothing like hearing that roar of the crowd and having that being on the field with your guys and all that stuff. But you try and find something else that you love and something else that you're passionate about and do that. But it can be a bit of a tough transition because you're doing something for all your life for such a long portion of your life and put all your focus and work and effort into that. So doing something different is anytime you have a change is a difficult situation. But you make the most of it, and like I said, you find something that you love to do and pursue that.
All right, let's talk about your podcast. How long have you been doing it for?
Yeah, so I started the podcast, end of November, really December of last year. And I just wanted to get an opportunity for guys to share their stories and to share what they're doing after football. And give fans and give others an opportunity to hear what other guys are doing after football. Because after you leave the game, you kind of fall off the map, so to speak, and you don't really know what guys are doing or how their lives are going. So this just gives them an opportunity to share the story and share all the great things that they're doing, because all the times you hear all the negative things of the negative stories of what guys are doing, all the negative stories of football players and how they're getting in trouble and all those type of things. But I wanted an opportunity for guys to share positive stories and for people to hear the great things guys are doing. So a lot of guys are doing some great things in their communities, and I just wanted guys to have a chance to share that.
All right. Fantastic, Lyle. Best place we can connect with you and learn more about you. Where can we go?
Yeah, so for the podcast, you can find us on iTunes or Spotify or Google Play. I have on social media, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at atgridiron.com. Atgridiron is our tag. And we have a website, is www.atgridiron.com. And yeah, you can find us there. All our podcasts are being broadcast there. All the information that I share is on there. So yeah, just look us up on social media.
All right. Well, fantastic, Lyle. Look forward to learning more of the story and different things and collaborating on certain ventures. So I appreciate you calling.
That's awesome. Thanks.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts, CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop-shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.